Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Ray Suarez, and this is On Point.
What are you doing with my pictures?
I'm getting rid of the ones where you guys were fat.
Those are the only ones where we look happy.
Does that voice transport you straight back to the 1990s? In case you haven't heard, Roseanne and the raucous Connor family are back and playing to Trump's America, tackling socially divisive issues from gender identity to racial equality while playing out the reality of everyday working class Americans simply struggling to make ends meet. More than 18 million tuned in. This hour on Point, the Roseanne reboot in the age of Trump. You can join us on air or online. Were you one of the 18 million who tuned in or not? Is a sitcom, this sitcom, a way to talk about big issues facing the country? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now in the studio is Joanna Weiss, author, journalist, former TV critic for the Boston Globe. You can find a link to her Politico piece headlined How Trump Inspired the Roseanne Reboot at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for being with us, Joanna.
Hi, Ray. Thank you.
Also joining me from Syracuse, New York, is Robert Thompson, the founding director of the Blear Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University, where he's also a professor. Bob, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And from New York, Cecily Bowen, senior entertainment writer for Refinery 29. You can find a link to her piece, headlined, I'm a Black Woman and I Want Roseanne to Stay So White, at our website, onpointradio.org. Great to have you with us, Cecily.
Thank you so much. Hey, Ray.
On ABC's The View on Wednesday, Joy Behar asked Roseanne why her character voted for Trump.
I wanted to show an accurate depiction of our country. You know, people are really, I know so many families, you know, that are divided over the election still, right. And they still, like, you know, are fighting and stuff. So we wanted to show that and how our family deals with it. Mm. And we all have the hope that people will start talking to each other again, because that's what we need.
Yeah.
Bob Thompson, rewrites or reboots of other shows might not attract as much attention as this one did. I think we should begin, for Roseanne fans and non-Roseanne fans alike out there in radio land, with a quick run through what made this show important the first time around.
Yeah, well, it wasn't by any means the first TV show about a working class family. That goes back to the beginning of television, radio for that matter. The life of Riley in the 40s and 50s, the Honeymooners, the Flintstones were a working class family. Laverne and Shirley, Sanford and Son, Good Times, even Married with Children beat Roseanne by a season. But when Roseanne came out in 1988 and it ran for 9 seasons, it really did capture some of the texture of working class life. They did an episode I'll never forget in the very first season where she's working in some factory that makes plastic forks, and she has to work overtime. So the whole episode is trying to balance how the two of them are both going to get their work done, get home in time to order a pizza. By the end, the whole house is in chaos. And in the very end, as the credits are rolling, Roseanne says, Dan, did you set the alarm? And they go into this fantasy of, I'm not going to work tomorrow. I'm not setting the alarm. And she says, I'm going to sleep late and take a nap and then read the paper. And then after they go through this fantasy, she goes, so, Dan, did you set the alarm? It was like Sisyphus. They'd just gotten through this horrible day only to set the alarm to have to do it all over again. I don't think that kind of sensitivity to the way an awful lot of people have to live their lives day to day had ever been captured on television before.
During the first episode of the Roseanne reboot, Roseanne and her husband Dan, played by John Goodman, tackle everyday issues facing working class Americans, as Bob suggests, such as increased drug prices.
Funny story. Our insurance don't cover what it used to, so I got half the drugs for twice the price.
What do we supposed to do?
Well, tradesies. I'll trade you five of my statins for five of your anti-inflammatories, and I'll sweeten the pot by throwing in a couple of blood pressures.
That was a terrific scene, Joanna Weiss, because it reminded us not only of where these people are socioeconomically, but that the fact that they're grandparents now. In fact, 20 years have passed. They're sitting there with their pill organizers, trading each other key medicines that a lot of Americans take.
No, 20 years have passed for the characters, but they are absolutely the people who they were. And it's fascinating to see how their kids have grown and what has happened to their kids. One of them, Darlene, is back at home, a single mom now with two kids, and sort of going through all the parenting issues and some modern parenting issues, including a gender fluid son who the family has to contend with. Becky, the older daughter, is a widow. She's single. She's considering becoming a surrogate mother. And the reason is because she could get $50,000 to do it. And that amount of money would afford her the ability to pay off her credit card bills and possibly buy a house. So you see the characters in a really believable way, and you see them contending still with this economic anxiety that characterizes a lot of people in this country.
As Joanna suggests, they are still the people they were, including Laurie Metcalf, the paleo-liberal sister of Roseanne Conner, on the first episode of the Roseanne reboot. Roseanne and her sister Jackie have been feuding. They've been fighting over politics.
How could you have voted for him, Roseanne?
He talked about jobs, Jackie. He said he'd shake things up. I mean, this might come as a complete shock to you, but we almost lost our house the way things are going.
Have you looked at the news? Because now things are worse.
Not on the real news.
Oh, please!
Cecily Bowen, tell me how this lands in your world.
I absolutely loved that scene. I have been very tickled, especially as a Black woman, to not only see fictional representations of Trump supporters coming out of the election, but also the way in which more liberal supporters of, say, Hillary or even Jill Stein have also been depicted in kind of this caricatured way, particularly really poking fun at what many people see as a kind of blind white feminism that is very passionate but woefully out of touch with the real issue. So I absolutely loved that scene between Roseanne and her sister. But I also thought that it did get to what Roseanne Barr spoke about in the actual interview about how do we get to a place where people are talking to each other. And I think that that was such a great kind of opening scene to reintroduce Aunt Jackie, because we are in this place where people are yelling and they are sparring and they are fighting, but we haven't, the dust does not seem to have settled to a place where people are having real conversations. And I think that that is one of the biggest promises of this reboot.
I'm glad you used the word stereotype, because when the door is thrown open and Laurie Metcalf's character Jackie is standing in the doorway, she's wearing a Nasty Woman t-shirt, so 2016, and a pussy hat. So 2017, and I thought, oh, come on. And the Roxane Gay piece in this morning's New York Times gets at a little of it in socioeconomic terms. What often goes unsaid is that when the working class is defined in our cultural imagination, we're talking about white people, even though the real American working class is made up of people from many races and ethnicities. Cecily, in fact, Latinos and blacks are more likely to be working class people than white Americans by a broad percentage. Is Roseanne an artifact or right in the slipstream of the culture right now?
So I think that Roseanne feels so fresh and relevant because Roseanne is born out of the conversations that we began to have about the white working class during the election in the campaigns. And this idea that Trump won the election, which is also a myth, this idea that Trump won the election because the white working class came out in droves to support him and helped push him over the edge, because white people who are poor and live in the middle of nowhere are fed up with being silenced and they feel like they're being overpowered. And we saw all of these sensationalized images of people in camouflage and Confederate flags out in droves and marching. And it really became this, suddenly these people who felt so invisibilized had a face, and it was thrust to the forefront of the country. And I think that Roseanne has now come up as a representation of that specific group. So I think that in that way, culturally, it feels very fresh and very relevant. But I think that, as you said, when we look at the actual fabric of America, who the working class is, it looks very much more like people like me, and people of color and immigrants and things like that.
I also think I agree, but I think that the Connors are interesting as a family to watch because they break some of the stereotypes. I think we've put up a lot of walls and we've made a lot of assumptions about other people in our culture, and the Connors bust through that a little bit. I mean, for one, their son DJ comes to the table with a daughter who is biracial or black. It's something that just sort of passes without anyone commenting on it, but there is, you know, they are an integrated family like so many families in America. The way that the Connors deal with the gender fluid of their grandson. The second episode was just fascinating and very poignant. Here's a little boy. He's about 9 years old. He identifies as a boy, but he likes to wear girls' clothing. He's starting a new school in the Connors town of Lanford, Illinois. He wants to go wearing a sparkly skirt on the first day of school. Roseanne and Dan are appalled. They don't understand it, but their concern is not that they disapprove. Their concern is just for the welfare of their son. They don't want him to be picked on. They'll do anything to defend him. So again, in real families, real families confront issues within the context of the love they have for each other. And to hear them and watch them play that out and feel that out, just it feels validating.
We're discussing the reboot of 90s sitcom Roseanne. You can join the conversation. What does this sitcom family tell us about the struggles of many real-life Americans? Should politicians have paid more attention back in the 90s to the Connor families of the world? I'm Ray Suarez. This is On Point.
Hi, I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Mindy Thomas.
And together, we bring you Wow in the World,
NPR's podcast for families.
Every week, we explore wild and new scientific discoveries.
We also ride a bird. Find Wow in the World on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Ray Suarez. We're discussing the Roseanne reboot in the age of Trump. You can join the conversation. Does the Connor family look like your family? Does it capture the political divides in your family? You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm talking to author, journalist, and former TV critic for the Boston Globe, Joanna Weiss, Professor Bob Thompson, founding director of the Blear Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University, and Cecily Bowen, senior entertainment writer at Refinery 29. A listener on Facebook writes, "Roseanne is great. Finally, a show where the star is pro-Trump. It's about time." From our website, "I do hope at some point Roseanne, the character, has a realization of how her vote has negatively affected the lives of her biracial daughter and gender nonconforming grandson, who she loves and supports on a personal level." Louisa writes, "It's pretty good at capturing what goes on in typical American households these days. People trying to maintain what they have, house, car, job. They face rising health care costs and lack of good opportunities and retirement future. Adult children fail to launch with lives of their own, struggling to find sources of income. Lots of families look like Roseanne's family, and it's no fault of their own." Scott writes, "The show was great. I enjoyed seeing it again. Nice that Republicans and Trump weren't the end of every joke. And Thinkin' writes, Roseanne was always trying to get a raise at work in the old show. I wonder if today's Roseanne would be against minimum wage increasing. I wonder if they'd like Obamacare or national health care to help them pay for their drugs. And Bob Thompson, I'm glad you mentioned Chester Riley, because on the radio, I don't recall, I mean, I didn't hear it first run. Let me be clear about that. But when Life of Riley was a radio show, they weren't making jokes about Harry Truman and Thomas Dewey. When it transitioned, as so many radio shows did, to television in the 1950s, William Bendix wasn't talking about Dwight Eisenhower. Were those shows that, even One Day at a Time in the 70s, as overtly political as Roseanne seems in these first two episodes?
Well, certainly not until we got to the 70s. All in the Family would change all of that in January of 1971. But we had Gomer Pyle USMC in 1968, the year of the Tet Offensive, about a contemporary Marine that didn't mention Vietnam. So forget Chester Riley mentioning Truman or Eisenhower. So no, television, especially television and comedy until the 70s, existed in a parallel universe that looked and sounded like ours, but where this stuff wasn't going on. But I think we should be careful too early to talk about how Roseanne is this breakthrough show featuring Trump America. Because in that first episode, which was actually two episodes glued together in an hour format, they do that whole Trump thing where Roseanne and Jackie, her sister, have that little fight and they haven't been speaking. But it was almost like a set piece. They did it. They got the joke in. They got that hilarious reference to Fox News in there. And then they kiss and make up. And that show then becomes exactly what it was in the 80s and 90s, which is about a struggling working class family who are living according to some pretty progressive ideals. We already talked about the biracial son, the gender fluid son. Back in the old days, Roseanne, especially in its later seasons, had multiple regular characters who were gay and lesbian. So for all of this looking at, like in that first episode, because of really what amounted to a couple of scenes as being a claiming of some new ideological character territory for fictional comedy, I'm not so sure that's how this show is turning out to actually be. And it wasn't what it was the first time around.
For those of you who didn't hear it, when the show premiered, Jackie, played by Laurie Metcalf, makes up with her sister after they haven't spoken for a year because of their differing politics.
I guess I didn't mean to imply that you're some right-wing jackass. Oh. I should have tried to understand why you voted the crazy way that you did.
And I should have understood that, you know, you want the government to give everybody free health care because you're a good-hearted person who can't do simple math.
Cecily Bowen, do you buy that after that scene is over and they kiss and make up, it's back to being a sitcom again?
Oh, absolutely. But I still think that it's such important groundwork that needs to be laid. And I think that, you know, when I think about my memories of Roseanne watching it as a child and as a teenager, what I do remember are the very progressive ways in which they address certain issues. I mean, when I found out that there was a teenager who was sexually active and had gotten pregnant, I was like, oh, I have to watch this show all the time because I'm intrigued. I was also a teenager and wanted to watch anything scandalous at that point. But I always thought that the way that the Connors moved towards issues were with a lot of friction, but also towards a meaningful end. So I'm thinking about the episode, I think it was in season 8 or 9, when DJ had to do a school play and he didn't want to do it because it required him to kiss a black girl. And Dan supported DJ in his boycotting of this play because he didn't want to kiss a black girl. And Roseanne wanted to force DJ to do it, mainly to appease her own sense of her not being racist, but also because she didn't want her son to grow up to be racist. And those are the memories that I have. And I do think that even with Roseanne Barr, the real Roseanne, even with her own political views, I still have faith that Roseanne Conner is going to lean into those conversations in a way that is meaningful. And I think that it was just really important to set that precedent that says, okay, this is how we're representing people on various sides of the aisle, but then here are the issues that are coming up in our family and how we have to talk about them.
And to be clear, there's a lot of black girl kissing going on in the latest iteration of the show because of the Conners' new grandchild, which, interestingly, we have no backstory on. She's just, so far, just there. Joanna Weiss?
Yeah, I'd say the conversations that we're talking about, they don't have to be about electoral politics to be political and to be of the moment. And, you know, I spoke on the phone to Bruce Helford, one of the executive producers of the show, who said, yeah, that's probably the only explicitly Trump conversation you're going to see in these 9 episodes. But future episodes deal with the opioid crisis. They deal with illegal immigrants. There are going to be some illegal immigrants from Mexico that the Conners are going to encounter and debate about. They're talking about health care and high deductible health plans. So you will still see members of the family coming out on either sides and opposite sides and different sides of these issues. The point is the conversation. And I think the big question for me about how Roseanne is received is whether both sides of the all sides of the political spectrum in this country will come to the show and embrace it in the same way, or whether this is going to be a show that maybe working class people from the heartland identify with, but coastal elites still don't want to have anything to do with.
Evansville, Indiana is our first stop. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ray.
What's on your mind, Scott?
Well, I just wanted to call in and comment about the talent of all the characters in the show and their supporting role. I mean, they're just so talented and so great, and they all support Roseanne Barr's character, and just they all do a great job, and especially Jackie. You know, they act like they ad-lib things half the time, and it's just so funny.
Thank you, Scott, for calling instead of about this sociological stuff, about the fact that it's a TV show and actors are doing good acting and writers are doing good writing. We need to be reminded of that every now and then. Thanks a lot for your call. Northborough, Massachusetts is next. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. Bottom line here, this show is designed to make deplorables feel good about themselves.
And is that a bad thing, Bill?
I beg your pardon?
Is that a bad thing?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it is a bad thing. I mean, basically, you're supporting people who have these prejudices and saying, yeah, it's all right to have these prejudices. You shouldn't feel bad about it. I consider that to be... Look, when I said this show tapped into something ugly about ourselves, I can't believe the things that have come out even during that election, never mind what's come out recently. And anybody holding these views should be made to feel ashamed of themselves, not feel like they have a legitimacy for people who, I'm going to use the word, normal.
Well, Bill, let's talk about how Dan Conner dealt with his grandson. He didn't tell him not to feel the way he feels. He didn't tell him not to be the person he is. He worried about his safety. He worried about him being bullied at school. He worried about how the other kids would react. And that is a 20-year stretch for a guy like Dan Conner in a place like Lanford, Illinois, isn't it?
I totally agree on that. But having said that, you've also got the star who's carrying the show, namely Roseanne Conner. And she is a dyed-in-the-wool Trump supporter. And she's carrying that torch, so to speak, whether it's designed for the show or not.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No. You make an interesting point. I want to throw that to Bob Thompson. It remains to be seen as ABC prepares to pull the trigger on more episodes, 7 more are in the can. We don't know where this is going. Whether there's a certain amount of head fake in the first 2 episodes, or whether, in fact, this will be Trump's America in sitcom form and some of Bill's concerns are justified.
Well, it's true we don't know where it's going, and it's not going too far because there's only a total of 9 episodes, and I think those Monday counted for 2. But so far, there is no sense that any of the offensive, intolerant sorts of things have been exhibited on this show at all. And given its history, I don't think there's any indication that it will be. This, so far, has been pretty much the old Roseanne, which was about tolerance and which was about embracing all kinds of different people. If anything, it was about embracing everybody that was suffering. The little slip that they pulled was by having her right off the bat say that she voted for Donald Trump. If you believe that anybody who voted for Donald Trump also embraces every single thing that Donald Trump has ever said or done, then I suppose you're going to have a hard time with that character. But the way Roseanne and Dan and the rest of the family have behaved so far doesn't give any indication that this is going to be about – nobody has said anything about building a wall yet.
In a scene from the Roseanne premiere, Darlene, played by Sarah Gilbert, as she was in the 1990s, confronts her father, Dan, played by John Goodman, about giving her son a pocket knife, which he then took to school.
It's to turn him into your version of a boy.
First of all, I didn't know there were that many versions. And yeah, I admit, I was happy he liked it. He's got a pocket knife now. I'm hoping it's a gateway to having pockets.
So you admit it, you were trying to make him more masculine.
When did masculine become a dirty word? And no, I'm not. I'm scared for him. If I don't get what's going on, what do you think a classroom full of 10-year-olds from Lanford is going to do?
We were so interested in the punchline that we almost forgot the nut line in that exchange. When did masculine become a dirty word? The anxieties of what the positive content of manhood even are in 2018, Joanna Weiss, just slid right in there. He's a 60-something-year-old guy, I guess. That was a smart bit of writing.
Well, as one of the callers earlier said, these are great actors and great writers. I mean, these are people at the top of their game who are creating and producing the show. And so they're able to let something in that doesn't bang you over the head, but kind of subtly. And the other thing is that the characters, that they're you're experiencing these issues through the characters, and the characters are so well drawn that their reactions feel very authentic. And I think, again, that's the potential and the power of this show. We don't talk about these issues among our own families in real life all the time, partly because things are tense, things are toxic. We put up these barriers. People don't want to hear it. When you can experience these issues through a proxy family like the Connors, when you can develop a relationship, these are people who come into your living room every week, you invite them in, you know them, you understand them, there's something really moving and powerful about seeing people who you kind of know actually hashing out these issues.
We're playing around with just how proxy, though. Jimmy Kimmel talked politics with Roseanne Barr on his show last week, saying he's surprised she's a Trump supporter.
I'm shocked because I know you were a very liberal, socially liberal person in general. I mean,
I'm still the same. You all moved.
We did.
You all went so far out, you lost everybody.
Cecily Bowen, the show is called Roseanne. Roseanne Barr's name is Roseanne. She's an artist. There's the art. Can we keep them separate? Is there a world in which we just say, oh, that's a character she's playing on TV? Or do we have to deal with the real Roseanne Barr, who she is and what she thinks?
That's such an interesting question, because I do think that in some capacity, there has to be some accountability for either the views that people hold and absolutely for the actions that people take. And I think that there are some blurred lines in terms of, so what has Roseanne done? Obviously, we can say she voted for Trump. That has contributed to the, you know, oppression of other people and or the discrimination that other people face and, you know, going down that rabbit hole. And then there's also just, okay, what does she believe? What does she think should happen to certain people because of their identities or status or things like that? And then we ask ourselves, so do we then want to support her and her programming on ABC and in this reboot? And I honestly think that that is a personal question that people have to ask themselves. And it does require digging into that nuance of, just because someone voted for Trump, does that mean that they inherently support every single thing that Trump has said? And I mean, Roseanne is a public figure, so we know quite a bit more about exactly what she does and does not support. But I think that that does become an individual decision. But what I will say, something that has been interesting, we just talked about this situation with the pocket knife. And I kept thinking, oh my God, had Darlene's son been black, the ramifications of him going to school with his pocket knife would have been so vast. And I think that that also shows how much further the show can and hopefully will go in these conversations if they're up for it.
When C.C. Wong met his mom's new tenant, he never suspected he'd end up getting replaced as a son, or that his replacement might have sinister motives. This week, Invisibilia looks at the things we don't say to our loved ones and the misunderstandings it can lead to. Listen on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Ray Suarez. We're talking about the reboot of the 90s sitcom Roseanne. 18 million people tuned in to watch, and you can join the conversation. There's a shorter line. If you weren't alive or stayed clear of the 1990s version, what do you make of the show now? Can TV shows start conversations that are often too hard to get started? You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm talking to author, journalist, and former TV critic for the Boston Globe, Joanna Weiss, Professor Bob Thompson, the founding director of the Blear Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University, and Cecily Bowen, senior entertainment writer at Refinery 29. Franklin, Tennessee is next. Elizabeth, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to say that I really appreciate this conversation, and I was pretty excited to kind of watch the show because I think, like so many Americans, we are all having to deal with how do we talk with family members across political lines, disagreeing and still loving each other. But at the same time, I feel kind of conflicted to support and watch a show where Roseanne is pretty extreme in her social media presence and stuff outside.
So you're having trouble with the separating the artist from the art question.
Yes, exactly like Joanna was talking about. You know, yesterday, Roseanne even tweeted a picture comparing David Hogg to Hitler, which is very extreme and not appropriate at all. So how do we support how I'm feeling that confliction, and how do we hold our celebrities accountable when we give them such a public platform for doing things like that?
Elizabeth, thanks a lot for your call. We'll go next to Springfield, Illinois. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray. I really loved Roseanne growing up. I watched it all the time. It was something we watched as a family. And I can kind of identify with it. We were actually probably low class, so we were poorer than Roseanne. But this pill was just a little bit too bitter for me to swallow in the present context, because it's like since the election, because apparently Hillary Clinton maybe didn't get enough white working class people. Everybody's been bending over backwards to try to pander to these white working class people and to figure out what did we miss, these poor white people. They've had a rough couple decades. How could we do this? I mean, meanwhile, black people, Hispanic people, Native people have been having horrendous couple of centuries. And at no point has anybody bent over backwards to try to examine what their lives are like or to bring them to the fore. And it's just, I can't quite handle it at this time, even though I did love the character. I did love the show. I think, you know, having a biracial grandkid doesn't really mean that much. I mean, I know plenty of people with biracial family members who I have heard say really racist things. So, I mean, the fact that they get over it because it's a grandkid to some extent doesn't really play to this idea that there's really a progressive viewpoint or that it really extends beyond the self. I think it's still all about the self in that sense, and not a care for society at large.
Could I point out another show that I think we should be talking about at the same time in this context? It started back in 2017, which is the another reboot from, in this case, 70s and 80s. And that's the new One Day at a Time, which has been totally, forget reboot, it's a whole new pair of boots. It's now about a Cuban-American family in Miami, a single mom. She's a vet. She's got PTSD. It deals with immigration. It deals with mental illness. All kinds of issues going on about a similar economic class as what we see in Roseanne. Now, 18.4 million people didn't watch it all in one night, but there are a lot of other things going on in television. And actually, I think that first two seasons of One Day at a Time is some of the most interesting television we've seen in several seasons.
I mean, it just goes to the point that representation is really important. And I think over the history of television, there have been, you know, ebbs and flows in terms of who gets the spotlight. But so much of TV is still aspirational. ABC still has Modern Family, which is, you know, again, about a large blended family. But the way they live economically is just so far into the stratosphere. Sometimes you kind of wonder if they're living beyond their means, given what their jobs are versus what their houses look like. So I think there's power for any group to see itself portrayed authentically on television. That goes for whatever, you know, it goes for gender. It goes for your ethnic background. And there's that's where Roseanne, again, I think that's the reason Roseanne's getting so much attention.
Eufaula, Alabama is next. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Hey, Ray, how are you?
Okay, how you doing?
I'm great. This is a great show. I'm glad I found y'all on my drive. There's so many things that people are saying that I wish I could comment on everything, but as far as something I just heard, as far as the extreme tweeting that someone has an issue about with Roseanne tweeting, well, the president tweets, right? And everyone in America pretty much tweets. That is 2018. Kids growing up, that's their norm, period. It's not going to change. So we as a country need to adapt to that. That's just something you're going to have to get used to. as far as Roseanne's show making deplorables, it should make deplorables feel bad. I find that incredibly funny because it doesn't make me feel bad at all, and I'm a Trump supporter. What it makes me feel like is this show can say things that people think, just like Trump can say things that people think, that if we said in a group setting, we would be looked at like we're crazy because we are offending somebody.
Well, Catherine, I think you're absolutely right. And I think sometimes you just got to say to yourself, it's a TV situation comedy. Sit down, take a deep breath, and talk to somebody who's got her head on straight, like Cecily Bowen from Refinery 29. Cecily?
Hey. So, yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I think that Roseanne absolutely speaks to a group of people who feel as though they have been silenced and feel as though there are ramifications for things that they may think because people are offended, either rightfully or perhaps not. But I think that there is a separate conversation that can be had about why it's so important for I think what the appeal of this show is for me is that I don't see myself involved at all. Like even DJ's black, people are calling her biracial, but I think she's black. And I think that we're just going to, I think that is going to unfold, at least in terms of casting. I think she's just black. But I could have even done without that character because I want to see white people talking about these things with each other and it not having to always fall on people of color or other minorities or marginalized groups to be the accountability person, to be the educator, to be the regulator, to be the fact checker, to do all of this additional work. I think that if we need to come to a place where we can talk about things like white privilege or what some people are calling white rage and these things that have become toxic in our culture, white people need to have those conversations. I can't have conversations with white people about what to do with their privilege because I'm not white. And I think that because we're in such a divisive moment where people are shutting off their ears, people aren't listening, I think that there does need to be a way in which people can have these conversations amongst each other. For example, I think more men need to be talking about sexual assault amongst men, you know. And I think the same thing applies. And there's something very satisfying and relieving about the fact that I don't have to watch Roseanne and then figure out how to insert myself into it to, like, correct everything that's wrong. I want to see white people struggle with this. I want to see white people doing this work.
Also, yes, it's a TV show. It's just a TV show. But comedy is a really important and useful medium for dealing with some of these issues. And a lot of TV comedy today has, you know, particularly I'm thinking about the late night shows in the era of Trump. They're fairly activist. There can be a sense of vitriol. They're sometimes partisan. This is Roseanne using the medium of comedy to have conversations in a way that feels a little bit safer and a little bit more approachable from all sides. I mean, I think a lot about that opening credit sequence, which is another thing that's kind of carried over from the old show to the new. You think about Roseanne. It starts with Roseanne, and they're at a kitchen table, and the whole family's there, and the camera pans around the whole table, and you see these interactions around the table between different family members. It ends always with Roseanne throwing back her head and laughing, this big belly laugh that kind of sends the message of, okay, no matter what happens, no matter what our conflicts are, we are here as a family, and that's the foundation of our family is what's going to carry us through.
Let's go next to Chelsea, Massachusetts. Jay, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I just kind of had like a twist on one of the other callers who was talking about not normalizing Trump supporters and Trump himself through TV shows like this. And I am very against normalizing Trump's ideas and his theories and the actions of his supporters. However, I find that there's a disconnect when people start going after other humans as people rather than the ideas or the actions that they cause, because everyone on both sides are flawed as human beings. However, the ideas that we have and we put out into the world are problematic, and that's what we have to be talking about rather than us as people, because we are all at the basis the same.
Well, and you know, when you hear the phrase normalizing Trump supporters as something to be worried about, that's 60 million people. That's 60 million people of your and my fellow Americans, Jay. And the idea that they are somehow excluded or need to have some bumpers or boundaries built around them is it's a wild proposition. Thanks a lot for your call. Indianapolis, Indiana is next. John, welcome to the program.
How are you doing today? Yeah, I just want to address the point that the lady was making about how if you're a Trump supporter, you're a racist, you don't like black people. And it's kind of funny how you have shows like Black Panther out that's all black on the whole show. They make many racial comments throughout the show, and nobody even bats an eye at it. One woman that's white says something that she's a Trump, you know, a supporter, and then everybody is a Trump supporter, supposedly is a racist. It should be just a show about showing everybody's opinion and letting everybody know how it is. And that way everybody can come together and talk and make a better country, not saying it's a black thing or it's a white thing or it's a Mexican thing. And then when she made the comment about how Mexicans and African-Americans do all the work in the United States of America is complete BS. You know, it's very bad that we live in a society where Roseanne was a show in the 70s and 80s, and now it's and it's trying to show documentation of the world and how we live, and it still is broke down to a sexual thing, a black thing, a white thing. It should just be something. If you don't like it, don't watch it. And that's what bothered me, and that's why I wanted to call in so bad.
You know, you bring up an interesting issue, John, because, yeah, Black Panther is a view into a black world. But the part that people forget is that other kinds of people have almost all their entertainment asking them to imagine themselves as part of this world. When you watch an all-white situation comedy, when you look at Friends in one of the most minority-dense urban areas in North America, and somehow these people, A, were in an enormous apartment, which never really would have happened, but that no black people or Latinos ever appeared in a city where there are 4 million black and Latino people. They're constantly, popular entertainment is constantly asking minority people to see themselves as part of this world and not have a problem with it. And yet I had to laugh when I heard some of that backlash about Black Panther, noting that there were only two white characters in the whole movie. And yeah, and so...
Welcome to the world.
Right? It takes place in an Africa, most of it. Okay, but I take your point that these things don't have to be white thing and a black thing and so on. It's a good proposition. But Cecily Bowen... You know, it is a moment where you were just talking about this a minute ago, about how there don't have to be black next door neighbors. Roseanne and the Connors can be who they are, and they don't have to do something for you to get you in the door.
Exactly. And that's why I'm glad that you brought up Friends. And I would say even the millennial version of that, Girls, where we have New York City with no people of color or very small amounts of them. I think that we are better served to actually show the parts of the country where there just are no black people, if that is in a world that we want to represent. It's not as if we don't have examples to pull from of places where there are no black people. When I first went to college, I met someone. I went to a big state school. I'm from Illinois, and there were people from rural Illinois. I'm from Chicago. But I met a white person who had never seen a black person in real life until they got to college.
In Illinois?
Absolutely. Wow. Because they were from a rural part of Illinois and had never met they had only ever seen black people on TV, basically. They had never actually interacted with a black person and talked to a black person. And you know, so I know that those places exist. And for me, it is a question of how are those people engaged in a meaningful way before they then get to college and or anywhere where they are confronted with the reality that we live in a country full of tons of different people. And treat them like human beings. And I just think that Roseanne is a starting place for that. And I don't think that black people or other people of color need to be ushered in to hold everyone's hands through that. Like, there needs to be like some personal investment on behalf of privileged people to just want to be better and want to do better.
That's Cecily Bowen, senior entertainment writer for Refinery 29. Thanks for being with us. Thank you, Robert Thompson, founding director of the Blear Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. Good to talk to you, Bob.
Thank you.
And Joanna Weiss, author, journalist, former Boston Globe TV critic. Thanks for joining me in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Ray Suarez. It's On Point.